It's the Let's Go Eat and Drink Show with hosts Jimmy Santangelo and Bill Allred. I'm your announcer, Zach Caton, and we're coming to you live on tape from Cassatt in the heart of 15th and 15th. Cassatt, a wine and craft cocktail bar at 1508 South, 1500 East in the Great Salt Lake City. Our guest today is Jeanette Bott, the President and Chief Executive Officer at the Utah Food Bank.
Most of our food is donated. Very little is purchased. USDA is probably our largest donor, so we have government commodities that come through.
Mm-hmm. Cheese and wheat. And
the government cheese. We all get the government cheese. Yeah.
Delicious.
Yeah. I've had it.
Little Ritz cracker.
Yeah. And now here are your hosts, Jimmy and Bill.
And our special guest, as Zach mentioned, Jeanette Bott, who's the President and Chief Executive Officer at the Utah Food Bank, and a person I'm actually quite familiar with over I don't know how many years now. Once a year, usually, maybe twice a year, I see Jeanette, and we talk about the food bank and people who need food. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much. It's a great, great opportunity, and how much fun can it be when we have to talk about something that's so serious?
Yeah.
So thank you for the setting.
You're welcome. Yeah, and you're right. It is really serious. And I, one time you were on the radio with us, Jeanette, and you talked a little bit about your personal story about how you got involved with the food bank and food insecurity and all that. Can you just give us a little of that?
I certainly can, and thank you for allowing me to share that. I think it helps people to understand my passion. And some of the experience that I had has given me probably some expertise. I was a single mom and became a single mom very quickly and very abruptly. There was not a battered women's shelter or a food pantry in the community that I lived in. Mm. And found myself almost immediately homeless with a five-year-old.
Jeez.
And pregnant with my son.
Mm.
So I went through a challenging time that I thought was probably the worst possible thing that could ever happen. As I look back now, it was truly a blessing. Had I stayed in that relationship, the outcome would have been very different.
Yeah.
And I joke about it now a little bit by saying that those are my years of training. Little did I know that what I learned then I could turn into really a deep, deep understanding of the job I'm doing now.
Mm-hmm.
I have much more compassion for our parents and our recipients, having been through it myself.
Well, an absolute empathetic approach.
Battle-hardened veteran.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So, Jeanette, I don't know what community you were living in, but you found yourself in Salt Lake City. What was the state of a pantry or a food bank then when you were first here?
It was interesting because I will say to you, I was in southern Utah.
Okay.
So it was a rural setting, smaller towns. This was one of the larger towns of the area, but those services just weren't available. And usually in those situations of domestic violence, you are almost forced to be estranged from your family.
Mm-hmm.
So you find yourself in a position where you're very much alone and have to be very independent. I was fortunate enough to find a job. I was able to surround myself with friends. I was able to reconnect with my family. And so for me, it was not an issue of immediacy of trying to find those services then. But as I then made the trek to Zion, as I call it, coming to Salt Lake City many years later, just got involved in nonprofits because we are so blessed to have great nonprofits here. But through the job that I had currently in Salt Lake, we were looking for a partnership that needed to be created with a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
And we all kind of lended towards the Utah Food Bank. So we started with a food drive.
How many years ago was that?
30 years ago.
30 years ago.
Gee. So for 30 years, I have been doing something of some sort, in some fashion, somehow, with the Utah Food Bank, never ever knowing that 30 years later I would be in that corner office.
And how long have you been, so you transition out of working in the commercial world and into having the food bank be your full-time job. How long ago was that?
Well, I thought at 55 I'd retire, And I thought,
don't we all?
Yeah, silly me. And I thought, you know, I can do something a couple of days a week at the food bank. And that was in 2009. Mm. What started out as a part-time job then immediately became a full-time job. I've been blessed to be CEO for over 5 years. Mm. And I'm surrounded now by 140 individuals who make up the most incredible staff. All of us believing truly in the mission that we are fighting hunger statewide. And a lot of us having experiences like my own. We understand the mission, we understand the need, and we know that someone has to stand for these folks, and we're so thrilled that it can be us.
Talk a little more specifically, if you would, about the mission of the food bank and how it's set up. Tell people where the food bank is, the main place.
So the main distribution and warehouse of Utah Food Bank is located on 3150 South 900 West. So we're here in Salt Lake City. About a year and a half ago, we acquired the warehouse to the west of us and needed to expand because the need was so great. That's the main warehouse and distribution center. People also need to remember that we are an affiliate of Feeding America. And they are the overarching umbrella, if you will, for food banks across the country. There are 200 of us that belong to that. And so with that affiliation comes the responsibility for the entire state of Utah. So Utah Food Bank, this is going to sound very strange. You can't get food at the Utah Food Bank if you're an individual.
Yeah.
A little bit of a caveat there.
No, I'm sorry. You can't have any of our food.
You can't have any of our food. So the role that we have in the state of Utah is that we distribute food to a partner agency. That can be a pantry. It can be an aggregate feeding site like St. Vincent de Paul. Mm. It can be a Ronald McDonald House.
And they have to apply?
They have to apply. They have to be a partner agency with us. We then have the responsibility to provide food for them. We are in all 29 counties in a variety of different types of locations. We are responsible, again, for the entire state through that kind of distribution process.
This is big business.
It's big business.
I mean, really, it is. It's a big organization. It's
huge.
Yeah. And you have to have trucks and refrigerated trucks, probably, and you have to have people to drive them and people to load them and people to sort food. I mean, it's a big business.
We distributed last year about 60 million pounds of food. So with that, we have over 70 vehicles on the road Monday through Saturday. So we're not a trucking organization, but we are.
Yeah.
We work with a variety of different types of institutions throughout the state. So we're not a human services.
But we are. You are. Yeah.
We are. And, we just recognize that throughout the state, some of the rural communities look so different than the Wasatch Front.
Yeah.
One size doesn't fit all. And we really thought we had a good plan in place until COVID hit. Mm. And with COVID came some lessons that were just remarkable for us. We recognized we couldn't continue to serve counties or rural areas one truckload at a time. So we decided that we needed to expand. We needed to have a geographic presence in different regions of the state.
I see.
So in St. George, we have an incredible warehouse that we just doubled in size. We've had that one since 2010. We are currently building in Springville. We'll be open in December, a 77,000 square foot facility that will serve central Utah. Also in December, we have a new distribution center with a pantry connected in Blanding that will serve San Juan County. And we currently have two pantries under construction on the reservation.
Mm. You realize, of course, you can't retire.
Well,
yeah, guess
you're
what?
Right. I can't, not for a while. My inner soul says I have a little bit left to do.
These ongoing projects. Where does most of the food come from? Is there that goes into the food bank and then gets distributed? Is there like any one main place, or is it a bunch of places?
So we're an emergency food network. So that means that we are serving people who are in crisis. So it could be a divorce, it could be a death, it could be loss of a job. There's lots of reasons that put families into crisis. Mm. We recognize that people in crisis can't afford to pay. So as an organization, we go out, to locations who we find have areas of manufacturers. We have most of our food is donated. Very little is purchased. USDA is probably our largest donor, so we have government commodities that come through.
Mm-hmm. Cheese and wheat. And
the government cheese. We all get the government cheese. Yeah.
Delicious.
Yeah. I've had it.
Little Ritz cracker.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's all you got, that you call it good.
Yep. Peanut butter, that's the other one.
Peanut butter. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the government helps with commodities. We have here around us in Utah a lot of manufacturing facilities, a lot of cereal manufacturing, yogurt. We have a lot of opportunities through organizations like Walmart who have distribution centers or hubs for their transportation. So a lot of produce and product will come through those, and they all come donated. And the key with the Utah Food Bank is we try to find donated product. We try to keep our cost low. And then we pass through all of this product to these 250 pantries that we serve throughout the state of Utah free of charge, so it can go to the end user also free of charge. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No one has to pay for the help they get from Utah Food Bank.
I know you also rely quite heavily on volunteer labor. I've done it a couple of times. It was one of the funnest, most fun things I'd ever done, though, really, in a way, is sorting the canned goods. And the weird variety of stuff that I think, who cans this? You know, I mean, there's a lot of odd food stuffs
out
there.
Who knew there was beef-flavored bologna-looking bubble gum? We get all sorts of very interesting items.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some that are older than probably you or me.
But you use a lot of volunteer labor for this.
Food, time, and money are the three things we always ask for. We've talked a little bit about money and how we try to pass through no charge to folks. But, you know, volunteer time and then the food that we collect from families, if you look at those collectively. So volunteer time is so important. We couldn't do what we do without volunteers. If I had to hire staff to replace volunteers, I'd have to hire about 75 full-time people. I don't have that kind of budget.
Yeah.
So people who can't give food or money, time is the best way to do it. If we're looking for food and a lot of the help, and it's about 3% of what we distribute every year, comes from food drive product that we'll go out to the community and say, we need you to help. We need you to donate food. We want you to go to your pantry, select from the variety that your family enjoys, and then bring it to us.
Okay. When the letter carriers, does that food come to you?
It does. Mm-hmm. And so those are called what we refer to as statewide food drives. So we work with the union of the letter carriers, and it's technically their food drive, but we're the beneficiary. And we work in as many communities as the Postal Service is hosting that event. Uh-huh. And it stays right in that town. If it's in Cedar City or St. George or Moab, stays at those local pantries. But we help facilitate. We distribute the bags. We help to advertise for that. So that happens once a year. And we do what we call Feed Utah in March, which is a statewide food drive. And then we always have our summer business food and fun drive, which we ask businesses to really think about helping during the summer. And then the holidays really for us go from October through January. And we love to see folks here really recognize that time of the year. And we jokingly say they have holly in their heart and they remember us then.
Yeah.
And the food drives are incredible.
Yeah. Gearing up for that now, you know, food, time, and money. I'm going to ask a question on the money part. I guess you can donate directly, but there's also a lot of nice activities like where you can activate people with the fun runs, the 5Ks, the 10Ks. So people are getting active, paying for that participation, but then a lot of those funds. Talk about that. That's an ingenious way to activate people.
Well, on Thanksgiving morning, we host what we call the Utah Human Race. Mm. And so this will be our 18th year. And you're right. It has that element of exercise. But more importantly for us, it has become a tradition for families. We see them come every year. We see them come back with their kids. Now we're seeing them come back with their grandkids. They love to costume. They love to have an element of fun around a topic that's very serious. But they're doing something that they know on that day when they're so thankful for what they have. They're teaching their kids about the opportunity that not everyone has that. Mm-hmm. So the lessons are being shared. The food and the money is being donated. Those proceeds come directly back to us, and then we're able to help across the entire state. And what people don't recognize, for every dollar that we receive, 97 cents of that dollar goes into programming, and only 3 cents goes into administrative costs. So we're running pretty lean and mean for the size of the organization that we are.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime a dollar comes to us, not only do we use that 97 cents, but our buying power, if we have to, is incredible. I can buy much better than you can at the grocery store.
You get a good discount.
Let us stretch that dollar for you and make it go from $1 to $9.
Yeah. Let's talk about food insecurity. You know, we used to just call it hunger. Now, for some reason, we call it food insecurity. People are hungry. How have you seen it change and wane and over the years? Has it gotten worse and better at times? Or what's the state of it?
You know, interestingly enough, Utah Food Bank has been doing this since 1904.
Mm.
So that tells me that the issues around hunger have been in our state for a very long time. If there was, by chance, an organization that should go out of business, it should be us. We shouldn't have to do what we're doing, mm-hmm. but we're doing it now at a magnitude we've never seen. Before COVID, numbers were starting to flatten. You know, it had...
There were some hopeful signs.
There were some hopeful signs. You know, we were working to improve the schools, to get more opportunities for kids to have a breakfast in addition to a lunch. We have a program called Kids Cafe where we're supplying dinner for kids. Mm. We did over 426,000 dinners last year. So the thing that's changed the most is not the fact that people are hungry, but the look and feel of the family has changed.
Yeah.
We're seeing a lot of single parents. We're seeing a lot of grandparents raising grandchildren. We're seeing a lot of seniors who are homebound, who don't have the ability to get out, to get to a store, even if they had the funds. We're seeing a lot of refugees come into our community that are different cultures, different languages, different dietary needs. One size doesn't fit all anymore. And it used to be that, you know, peanut butter and green bean and mac and cheese was kind of a go-to. It's not necessarily the case anymore. And we have to be current, and we have to stay in touch, and we have to get the right foods to the right people.
So the people that need the food, and I'm just sitting here thinking, you're never going to go out of business. Maybe things will get better, but there will always be some sort of need. There will still be somebody in your community who's going hungry. If somebody's listening to this and they say, well, I want some of that food, what's the best thing for them to do?
You know, the processes are pretty easy to find help. And UtahFoodBank.org is a great resource. Our webpage has lots of information, calendars, locations, times, whether it's a community distribution where we pull into the parking lot of a church or a business on a certain day and you can drive through. Mm-hmm. Gives you a list of all the pantries throughout the state, the hours they're open. It talks to you about food box programs if you are homebound and need help. It talks about the kids programs. Probably the biggest mistake people make is not taking that first step to look for a kind of service or help for them. And if you're overwhelmed or don't have access to a computer, you can use your cell phone. And if you call 211 here locally, it directs you immediately to a person on the phone who will ask for your zip code. And once you tell them where you live, they will give you a list of services that are available. And maybe it's not just food. Maybe it has to do with rent assistance or heat. Services are there, but people need to ask.
And if people are interested in helping the food bank, I guess go to utahfoodbank.org on the web. That would probably be the best way to find ways to donate or to volunteer time. And it's a fascinating, it really is a fascinating operation to see it going on, and people with forklifts and refrigerators and cans of food. And it's amazing. The variety of stuff that shows up is just astonishing.
And I think people sometimes think of us as a small neighborhood pantry, and we're not.
Nope.
We're far from that. And we love to have people come. We love to have people come and take a tour and see what we do and see who we are and see why the challenges we have are changing so drastically. And as we do what we do, we can't predict things like inflation.
Yeah.
We can't predict things like COVID. But we do know that there's not a child here who deserves to go to bed hungry at night. There isn't a senior who deserves to go without a meal. So collectively, We all need to come together. One organization can't do this. It has to be a partnership. It has to be a collaboration. It has to be a group of us working, knowing that one meal doesn't take care of a problem, but a few meals can make a huge difference.
Jeanette Bott, the CEO, Chief Executive Officer, and President of the Utah Food Bank. You didn't look at those talking points you brought once. Not once did you look down at those talking points. Now, I'm going to say that's because I'm a skilled interviewer and know how to... And know how to bring the answers out of you.
It was you. It was all you.
It was all me.
It was all you.
Yep. And now we're going to take a break here for something Jimmy likes to do, his little splishy splashy of news.
Yeah, we're going to do a little splash of news. I've got two headlines coming at you here.
Oh, should we acknowledge
let's take a look. Little beverage and snacks, as we like to do it. Let's go eat and drink with Cheers. Jimmy and Bill. This is Fentimans soda. This lemonade, and I love this soda. It's
really good.
Non-alcoholic, very strong. It's almost a non-alcoholic beverage. Mm-hmm. It's so strong and flavorful, and it is available at your local grocer and by the bottle, a small little 12-ouncer. And then we're nibbling on some popcorn, which I just love. I just love popcorn, and whether it's with wine or food, it's my go-to snack. And this is a sweet and spicy popcorn.
It's got glitter on it.
And it has called Sparkles.
I don't get it. It's got glitter on it.
Yeah. They should call it like a unicorn popcorn. You know, you're gonna pee the rainbow later today, Bill.
Oh, is that
if you
what
have
it
more
is?
Than it, yeah, if you have more,
all right,
more than three portions.
What's happening in the news?
No, back to the news. Napa Valley icon Rumbauer Vineyards is purchased by E&J Gallo's luxury wine brand. People are saying Gallo is taking a bite out of Napa Valley. Rumbauer Vineyards, one of the best-selling U.S. wine brands that ignited America's buttery Chardonnay craze, has been sold. An agreement with the Rumbauer family to purchase Rumbauer Vineyards comes just 2 months after Gallo snapped up the Hahn Family Winery's portfolio, which is centered in Central Coast, California.
I remember when Ernest and Julio Gallo wine was just the dregs, you know, the big jug of wine.
And it would, their face on the label.
Yeah, and it was considered just, you know, what do? They make this stuff in a bathtub or something? But they've really just two
businessmen that came together, Italian guys here in the States. They really hit it strong after Prohibition by importing wines in the mid to late 30s, 40s and 50s. And they really helped pave the way. They did have some commercial brand wines then there in the 70s and 80s, but now they've come back strong, organizing quite a bit. Next, in champagne news, and I know, Bill, you like this story. Tattinger, which is a champagne producer out of France, Tattinger's mistress convicted of harassment following sex life allegations. The woman, Samira L., was given a suspended one-year sentence for chasing the 70-year-old Tattinger at the family's estate in Reims and also harassing other family members. The woman, following the break of their relationship, took a train to Reims to confront the 70-year-old Tattinger.
Who admitted that he was never secretive about having this affair with this woman.
The woman pulling a knife and chasing him down the street. The Times reported in a text, she said, quote, "If I had running shoes on, I would have caught you and would have murdered you," end quote. According to the report, she accused him of forcing her into a sex-fueled champagne-drinking lifestyle, taking her with him to visits to Paris libertine sex clubs, and also other false accusations about his sexual proclivities. Not sure if this is going to help or hurt the champagne brand.
Tattinger. They've been around for generations.
Right? Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
How old was she?
It didn't say.
And she couldn't catch the 70-year-old man?
Yeah, that is kind of odd, isn't it?
Just a thought.
Yeah. And Jimmy left the best part of the story out. She was threatening with her knife to de-man him.
To cut off.
Going to cut it.
Yeah. Small knife is what you're saying.
Yeah, Very good, Jeanette.
It wasn't
very
a saber.
Good. Very good.
And that's your splash of news.
Okay, well, there's a little flash. Do you want to explain why we do this?
So we do this because as a sommelier on the floors of restaurants, I would, on Thursdays, have flashcards with the staff just to keep them on their toes, because just something fun and in creative. So that's where the spirit of this flashcards comes from, and we'll see what we got.
We'll just do two questions, okay? These are just questions about beverages, essentially, Jeanette Bott, who a CEO of the Utah Food Bank. You don't get any wine at the food bank, do you?
You would be surprised what you we do. Get at the food bank.
What do you do if you get... I'm sure that there are people whose family members have passed and they leave behind a bunch of wine or spirits and they say, I don't know what to do with this. Here, what do you do with it?
It has to be thrown away.
Does it? I could help you with that.
Bill could be the mobile.
Staff would love to help as well, but nonetheless.
Yeah. All right. Here's a question, Jeanette. True or false? Sniffing the cork gives you a good sense of the wine.
No.
You just puked. You cuter.
Because I had another comment to make, and I thought he didn't want me to.
Oh. Yeah, in the days when the authenticity of the bottle was more suspect, it was perhaps important to see the wine uncorked at the table and to verify the brand on the cork. So that's why people did it.
They were reading, not sniffing.
Yeah. But now smelling the cork is just, you don't have to do that.
Not necessary.
Okay, yeah. And so in the Bible, Noah gets drunk on wine. True or false?
Well, with all those animals.
Wouldn't you? Two by two? Yeah, give that some thought for a minute.
I'm sure that it's true. Genesis 9:20-21. Noah, the tiller of the soil, was the first to plant a vineyard. He drank of the wine and became drunk and he uncovered himself within his tent. And then it was his daughter-in-law or his... some family member saw him naked, and that was a mortal sin. Noah had sinned by doing that. So there you go. That's...
well, your flashcards. Cheers. Thank you so much. What a wonderful podcast with you, Jeanette. Thank you so much.
I'm
going to
go
home
now and read the Bible.
That's right.
Oh, there's lots of stuff in there. The Utah Food Bank, please. It is coming to that season, too, where the Thanksgiving season, the holiday season, and... the need is there all year round, but people feel that they can give a little more that time of the year for some reason. And there is an expectation, I think, that it's nice if people can have a Thanksgiving dinner that they might not otherwise have, but for the Utah Food Bank. So I know we always try to solicit turkeys for the Utah Food Bank, and we do pretty well with that sometimes.
You don't launch them off a helicopter, do you?
No, we do not.
WKRP in Cincinnati.
We've all been marred by that. We've never forgotten that ever.
They don't fly.
Yeah. Just go to utahfoodbank.org and find ways that you can help. And you know, nobody should go hungry, as Jeanette said. Nobody should go hungry. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, and I'll say happy holidays, even though it's early.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. All right. Thank you to Kasat for having us here. I'm trying to say, don't forget, you can email us at the Let's Go Eat Show at gmail.com. The Let's Go Eat Show at gmail.com. You can ask us anything, even if it doesn't make sense.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Let's Go Eat and Drink Show with Jimmy Santangelo and Bill Allred. Comments, questions, or angry complaints to the management should be directed to the Let's Go Eat Show at gmail.com. The Let's Go Eat and Drink Show is produced by Dawson Dow, with help for this episode from Macy McCohen. The Let's Go Eat and Drink theme was composed and performed by Doug Wild. I'm Zach Caton. Good night and good luck. Let's go eat.